of our series on the creation versus the evolutionary model. And next week, Randy Bowles will be filling in. So we look forward to that. There are handouts if you need them. Dan's getting a whole handful. So if you need them, just raise your hands. Okay. In this particular lesson, we're going to look at the fossil record. In Genesis 1, 21 and 25, it said God created the great sea monsters and God made the beasts of the earth after their kind. So we're starting out, the creation model is that we understand that God created everything, even the dinosaurs. So it's that's part of our concept. Renowned evolutionist LaCrosse Clark once remarked that the really crucial evidence for evolution must be provided by the paleontologist whose business it is to study the fossil record. So in all the models for evolution, they have to fall back on the fossil record, because that's the only place where you're going to have a record. If there's ever to be any empirical evidence for evolution, by necessity, it will have to come from what has been called the record of the rocks, for it is there here that the actual historical evidence of any evolutionary scenario will be found. Makes sense. If we go back to that first, whatever cell that formed and split into something else or whatever, there's not going to be a record of that. It didn't do it in an environment that leaves a trace. The only place you're going to find any kind of empirical evidence is among the fossil record, the earth, whatever, and the bigger kind of categories of species. As it turns out, however, some of the strongest evidence for creation is to be found within the fossil record instead of for the evolutionary model. Facts and their interpretation is our first section here. The fact that fossils occur and represent the environment in which they once lived is not under dispute. We know there's fossils. You can go to any natural museum and you can see bones and fossils and all sorts of things. It is the interpretation placed on those fossils by evolutionists that creationists call into question. In the short film on discoveries at the Paluxy River in Texas, they show in the fossil record, they actually lifted a shelf up to show, man prints and dinosaur prints where they converge and man stepping in a dinosaur track, showing that men and dinosaurs lived at the same time. I remember an interview with one of the scientists there and asking him about, what about this? It looks like man was contemporary with dinosaurs. And his argument was, well, if we didn't have a chart that said that dinosaurs died out a million years before man, I could believe this, but they're going to go with some other way to explain it. The methodology of interpreting both the local and the important, or the location and the importance of various fossils, is widely recognized as being circular. It is assumed that the progress goes from the simple to the complex, that is, that evolution is true. Fossils are thus arranged that way and thus supposedly prove evolution. I remember when Nancy and I visited Washington, D.C., and actually there's museums off of the main drag where the Smithsonian is, and we went to one of the little side museums, and it was very much evident what they were talking about. They showed supposedly the evolution of a horse. So they had all these horse skeletons, and they start with the smallest, and it builds up. But that's not the way it occurred. The size of a horse varies in culture and time, and it kind of goes, it just doesn't naturally start small and get big. But that's the way they put the bones, or the skeletons, in order to make it appear that way, with no explanation. Also, this logical fallacy has not escaped evolutionary scientists like R.R. West to observe. Contrary to what most scientists write, the fossil record does not support the Darwinian theory of evolution, because it is this theory, and there are several, which we use to interpret the fossil record. By doing so, we are guilty of circular reasoning if we then say the fossil record supports this theory. What he's talking about is, okay, if you look at the various layers of the Earth, how do you date the layer? Well, it's one of those things, whatever number you plug in, you get back. Say if you say, well, this certain layer of Earth is 500,000 years old. Okay, well, how do you know that? Well, it's got a 500,000-year-old fossil in it. Well, how do you know the fossil is 500,000 years old? Because it's in a 500,000-year-old layer. Now, if you start off with another number saying, well, that layer is a million years old, you know, how do you know? Well, it's got a million-year-old fossil in it. How do you know the fossil is a million years old? Because it's in a million-year-old layer. Okay. So basically, the evidence is not really there. It's whatever you plug into it, and that's why they call it circular. In order to establish neo or new Darwinian evolution, its proponents must be able to show intermediate or transitional forms between animals and plants in every major taxonomic subdivision. Charles Darwin himself postulated there should be innumerable transitional links in the fossil record. However, he went on to admit, geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain. And this perhaps is the most obvious and serious objection which can be argued against this theory. The explanation lies, I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. So in Darwin's time, he postulated there should be all these skeletons. But it wasn't evident his time. He just says, well, as they keep digging, they'll find them. However, after 125 years of additional paleontological work, there's still no further help. It is like a prosecuting attorney trying a murder case and saying in his opening speech, we know that the defendant is guilty of murder, although we cannot find a motive, the weapon, the body, or any witnesses, but we still believe he's guilty of murder. Yeah, that's what the evolutionist is going. We have no evidence whatsoever this is the way it occurred, but we're still going to claim, you know, this is the way it happened. It is to this point that scientists like Mark Ridley, the British evolutionist, admit no real evolutionist, whether gradualist, that is, a slow, evolving, changing of things, or the punctuationist, this is, you know, when they finally gave up on the gradual, you know, evolution, they started coming up with punctuationism. In fact, one guy used one of those little cricket things. He said, well, certain animals went along in a certain way, and then click, click, they bounced up to a different species. So that was the new, you know, theory. But unfortunately, for that one, you've obviously got no evidence for, because it happened, you know, almost overnight. So whichever branch of evolution you look for, there's no evidence for it. You can't find it in the fossil record. Predictions of the two models. As the evidence from the fossil record is considered, it is essential to know exactly what the evolution and the creation models predict so that the predictions can be compared to actual data. The creation predicts, you know, we believe that God follows the Genesis record. The oldest rocks, then, do not always contain the most primitive life forms. I mean, if God started with the most... according to the creationists, what did the first man look like? A little tiny thing that's, you know... No, he started off full-grown and mature. So if you check the fossil record for men, they should be already fully formed, along with every other animal. I mean, you couldn't create them, you know, pint-sized infants and whatever, they wouldn't have survived. You had to, you know, they had to be fully grown and able to reproduce and everything else, defend themselves, whatever. So that's what we're looking for. Also, that the simple to the complex graduation of life forms does not always appear. again, the instantaneous creation of things. And a simple to complex, God has started with the complex in many cases. And there would be a regular and systematic absence of transitional forms. The world started fully functioning. And you know, that's the way God created it. The evolution predicts the oldest rocks contain evidence of the most primitive forms of life. Our younger rocks then would exhibit more complex forms. Two things to say about this. How do you know the age of something, you know, as you're looking at all these forms? Now, what they assume is, okay, as you know, we get floods and things begin to settle, the sediment, you know, takes, you know, they can measure, you know, how long it takes to settle in. And then, you know, the next flood, it shows a little layer and the next settling in. As a way of demonstrating, I did this one time in a solution that was kind of viscous, but it kind of got messy after a while, so I'm just going to explain it to you. Okay, that's all fine and good if you believe that the earth just went on as always it has, you know, as they argued in 2 Peter, as it has always from the beginning, that you had a layer start, the first beginning layer, and you can do this in a, say if you have a clear jar, just use sand, you know, in a solution. And add your first kind of sediment, and you know, you drop it in and watch it all settle the bottom and time it. And you can say, well, it took 20 minutes for that first layer to happen. Okay, then start another layer. You know, like in the middle of it, you know, drop a little bead or something like that. And you know, you can say, well, how long was this in operation before the little bead appeared? And you go, well, I've got the 20 minutes of the first layer, and it looks like, you know, the first 5 minutes of the second layer, so 25 minutes. Okay, and you can keep building the layers that way. That's great if nothing disturbs it. But if you pick that thing up and shake it, you know, how do you know what the time element is? It's been disturbed. Okay, enter the flood and the breaking up the fountains of the deep and everything being churned. Yeah, and you can add, you know, folding of earth with earthquakes and volcanoes and the renewing of the earth itself and all this stuff that takes a renewing of the planet that God designed into it. It kind of eliminates your nice little way of, you know, timing things. Also, when you talk about the gradual, number C, a gradual change from simple to complex is apparent. And when I took biology as an argument in my term paper, I was using an argument against evolution. And I was just primarily using the textbook. And I pointed out, I said, the textbook says we've been here 4.6 billion years. Okay, the textbook says the first 2 billion was used up by just the forming of the first simplest life forms. The second 2 billion was used up by the simplest life form slowly getting into a little bit more complex. Okay, that means you're left with 600 million years in order to go from sort of complex to the most complex organisms that we have, including man. Now, the first thing we also noted in the textbook was the more complex something gets, the more finicky it gets. Okay? Examples of fireflies. Yeah. Some female fireflies will not mate with certain, you know, guys that are, you know, sending out the wrong signal. It's got to be the perfect, you know, lighting and everything else. Even in our own life, how complex does it get in order for two people to get together in physical intimacy, where you don't get that "I have a headache" kind of thing? Yeah, the more complex problems are introduced into the issue. Now, I said, you know, you've got 600 million years in order to get these really complex systems going, but the lab book says we've been here for 4.1 billion years. I mean, what's 500 million years between friends? Okay, but that's 500 million years that are now gone, and now you're left with only 100 million years for man to appear fully complex from sort of complex organisms. Yeah. The time frames just don't give it to us. This is why they have to keep pushing it out more and more, you know, of more time in order to allow for this one in, you know, 10 to the 200 billion, you know, zeros in order for the chances of things to occur. In these transitional skeletons, I had a friend, you know, I was working with, and he was a biological illustrator, and he used to do scientific illustrations for, I think, the San Bernardino Museum. And we were having a discussion on evolution, and I was saying, the gradual thing is not on the record. And he goes, well, he says, what you see in the museum is just some of the stuff that they put together. He says, if you go down the basement, you will find uncountable skeletons, bones, and everything else. I mean, he's starting to get a little hot about it. I just ask a simple question. I go, okay, are any of those bones transitional? Does any of it, the skeletons, whatever, show something in the movement between one species and another? I've read about this in books, but I could actually see him glaze over. I mean, he kind of looked at me, and then his thoughts kind of went out into infinity as he kind of probably surveyed in his mind. And we got to be good friends after that. Yeah, he didn't think I was as crazy as I'd been coming on, because he just suddenly realized that his arguments had just went up in smoke, because there was no evidence for all this transition. Large numbers of transitional forms will be present. They're not. They're not. As one examines the data, it becomes clear that the evidence from the fossil record is strongly against evolution and for creation. First, there have been no simple to complex gradation of life forms. As one science textbook put it, even theoretically, to make the vast biological leap from primitive organism to the Cambrian fauna possesses enormous problems. Not only is the evidence not there, to even imagine the evidence, what it would look like, is beyond the ability of just about everybody of how it occurred, especially not just from one life form, but for all of them to take off. In fact, you know, just think about it. How do you go from one simple cell, you know, doing a little mitosis, dividing and becoming, you know, two simple cells, to something that decided to become male and female? How many times do you have to work that before it worked out? You know, it's inconceivable about how that could occur in so many complex life forms. Why the sudden decision? To have pairs. As a remarkable series of transformations is required to change a single cell protozoa into a complex animal, such as a lobster, crab, or shrimp, the new Cambrian animals represent an astonishing leap to a higher level of specialization, organization, and integration. But it's unexplained. You know, there's no evidence for it. Second, there are no transitional forms found in the fossil record. Harvard paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould has written, "The absence of fossil evidence for intermediary stages between major transitions in organic design, indeed, our inability even imagination to construct functional intermediates in many cases has been a persistent and nagging problem for gradualists' account of evolution." They lack the imagination and the evidence for this. Okay. Again, we're presenting statements from evolutionists about, you know, all that's missing from their theory. And why Kirkuk said, you know, your faith in evolution actually has to be greater than your faith in God, because it requires a greater leap of belief into something that you have no facts for. The classic example is the extinct, I hate long words, Archaeopteryx, my best, you know, stab at it, which was hailed as the missing link in the alleged scenario of reptile to bird evolution. You know, notice a lot of things are developed on this. You know, Jurassic Park, that dinosaurs were once birds. You know, it works into society. Yeah. You know? You know, all sorts of imaginary things. Although the soft parts do not remain, the certain skeletal features are similar in some reptiles. Its feathers and wings are fully formed for the active powered flight. I think I have given you a picture of the bird, a handout. Give you also this. The picture on the right is the actual fossil that they dug up. The picture on the left is an artist representation of it to kind of get rid of the background to show you what they have. I think I stepped on this one time. Anyway, what's left, they're trying to figure out, is this a bird or is it a reptile? A study of the brain form from the inner cranial of the specimen also suggests that it should be classified as completely avian, that is, bird. And not a reptile-like bird or a bird-like reptile. It exists as it is, fully formed. Peculiar organisms have been discovered in the ocean depths or in various fossil-rich strata, and all of them were previously unknown forms. A few are so distinctly different and hence unrelated to other species in any evolutionary sense that whole phyla had to be created to classify them. We still got some of these things running around in Australia, you know, duck-billed platypuses and, you know, kangaroos, you know, whatever. You know, there's nothing before them and nothing after them. They're just, you know, they are what they are. Also, when certain organisms appear in the fossil record, they seem totally adapted to their environment and completely conform to their distinct type. Bats, for example, appear suddenly in the fossil record 60 million years ago, according to the evolutionary tables, yet were not preceded by any known transitional forms. There was nothing that appeared like a bat before they appeared. Or do they differ greatly from the modern species? So even as the time wore on, the bat was a bat. Dr. Gould also pointed out the extreme rarity of transitional forms of the fossil record persist as the trade secret of paleontology. I mean, it may appear out there that, oh, you know, evolution occurred, but the paleontologists aren't coughing up any evidence. In fact, they kind of keep it quiet. We don't have anything. The evolutionary trees that adorn our textbooks have data only at the tips and nodes. Have you ever seen the tree and they show an animal at the end of the branch, but there's nothing in between? Why? Because there's nothing in between. Makes sense, yeah. A little obvious observation. And they kind of every once in a while plug something in, but the things have changed. When I was a young man first starting college, the debates were raging. In fact, it went from that we descended from apes to that we descended from sharks. And it keeps going, so now we're descended from aliens. All the rest is inference, however reasonable, not evidence of the fossils. Dr. Good also lists two characteristics of the fossil record that cannot be ignored. One we just looked at with like the bats. Stasis. Most species exhibit no directional change during their tenure on Earth. Okay. While they're here, they don't change. There's no evidence of evolution. Anything going different about them. They appear in the fossil record looking much the same as when they disappeared. Also, sudden appearance. In any local area, a species does not rise gradually by the steady transformation of its ancestors. It appears all at once, fully formed, which is what the creationist expects. God created it. And we all got to start within a day or so. The creation model predicts a sudden explosion of life, fully formed plants and animals. The creation model predicts a mixture of life forms. The creation model predicts a systematic absence of transitional forms. So which model does the evidence confirm? Evolution or creation? In his 1976 presidential address before the British Geological Association, Derek V. Eger stated, "It must be significant that nearly all the evolutionary stories I learned as a student have now been debunked." It must be tough, you know, being a scientist, know that your science keeps changing. I mean, you've got to be looking at all those textbooks you bought, all the things you had to learn, all the tests you had to take, and 10 years later, find out it's all fake. Didn't exist, all make-believe. You know, and that's the state of evolution, as we look at now. Despite the mockery of God and everything else, in fact, they have to. I mean, when things get mocked, you know, take it as a red flag that there's no evidence on the other side of it. They have to resort to that. If there was a ton of evidence, they'd come out very pristine and professional and very logically try to explain it all with the evidence and the slides and everything else. They don't. So they just sit in ivory towers and take, you know, easily, you know, molded young minds and infuse them with a lot of fake science. I'm trying to be careful what I say. Okay. Again, I don't have anything against science. I don't want to mock it. I have a great respect for a lot of scientists that are out there. I loved science when I was in college. Started out with a criminology major. I had, you know, took physics, chemistry classes, and again some biology too every once in a while. And I loved it. You know, I was in the forefront, you know, when they were making their first trips into outer space. I remember one of the men I looked up to. His name was Robert Buckheim, and he worked at Rocketdyne, and he signed, you know, gave me an autographed copy of The Principles of Rocketry that he had written. I grew up around scientists. Deep respect for them. And so I'm a little bit miffed when you get all these people that come up with science fiction and debunk those that believe in God when the very beginning of science depended on those that did believe in God. The Copernicus, the Galileos, the Newtons, the Einsteins, they were all believers that God had created our universe, and it was a cosmos, an orderly put together universe with rules. And as the beginning of science, they decided to start collecting and find out what those rules were that God created. And we can do the same thing, you know, as good scientists, as good Bible students, whatever. Someone once said, it's not, you know, science and the Bible that have a problem. It's bad theology and good science and bad science and good theology that have a problem. But both were, you know, presented to us by God, revealed to us, the nature of God and the supernatural, and also the nature of the physical, you know, which he created. And therefore, we should find no inconsistencies in what we're trying to do. Only inconsistencies in people that don't have the foggiest idea what they're talking about. Now, what we try to do in this is just to give you a good, solid feeling of, you know, your position as a Christian is a solid one. And the evidence does begin to pile up. We can offer really empirical evidence that science cannot. As we present the Bible, you know, people look at it and say, oh, it's just a book that's been written and altered and whatever. And they start off with fallacies. It's not a book. It's a library. 66 books written over a period of 1,500 years by over 40 different authors in various stations of life from various countries with one thing in common. they all believed in the same God and served him the same way. Okay? Some of the rituals have changed, but the moral code has, you know, existed from the very beginning. God instituted marriage from the very beginning, and it made the transition through the old covenant and into the new. It's still the same. Jesus refers to it. He goes back, you know, in Romans 9 and said, in the beginning, you know, God created us man and male and female. And warned, you know, what. In fact, that's the problem we're having now. The Supreme Court is trying to decide what is a marriage. You know, we know what a marriage is. It's a male and a female as God intended, one man, one woman for life. Okay? And a marriage constitutes, get this, what God has joined together. God does not join together homosexuals. God does not join together people that are living in adultery. It's not a marriage. If God hasn't joined them, they're not joined. And that's simple enough. The science, you know, from the beginning is stayed the same. But even more, you know, the Bible is filled with, and it's the only book, and we've pointed this out now. You know, what other book is able to make prophecies? Since we're dealing with an encyclopedia, really, of, you know, a collection, a library, that at the beginning can make predictions, you know, 750 years, 500 years, 2,000 years before it's going to happen, and record it happening. There's not a work of man on earth that can do this. What about, you know, we've been talking about type and antitype. Only God can come up with, you know, a bunch of things that, you know, are representative of something to occur 1,000, 1,500 years later. Man can't do that. Nor in his predictions can he be as accurate as people claim to be prophets, the Gene Dixons and Edgar Candies. Their predictions are probably, you know, 80% wrong. The predictions by God are 100% right. Even, you know, Nostradamus, you know, his prophecies are so vague, and a lot of the stuff he predicted didn't come true. And it's amazing he couldn't see things that were occurring right in front of his nose. But you have instances like Isaiah 46, where he talks about Cyrus. That he's going to open up the doors of a kingdom, and he calls Cyrus by name, and it's at least 125 years in the future. Or a young king that's going to come by and be a blessing to Judah. And again, by name, Josiah. I think it's like 500 years in the future. Or predict that if anyone tries to rebuild Jerusalem or Jericho, he'll lose his firstborn with the putting down of the foundation and his lastborn with the setting up the gates. 500 years later, it occurred exactly. And there's a lot of that. In fact, one of the things that doesn't even dawn on people is the Bible unfolds the history of the world. You know, in the last part of the prophets of Daniel, especially Daniel, and some of the others, as you look at it, you know, and you look at how accurate the history is as you compare it with the archaeology, and sometimes it doesn't sink in that most of the history of the Bible is occurring before it happens. Daniel, especially the last chapters, are telling you what's happening in that 400-year period between the final prediction by Malachi and the beginning of the prophecies of the New Testament. And it's so accurate, it's laborious. If you've ever studied that history, man, there's so many wars going on between Syria and Egypt and Palestine and Rome coming in and what all this stuff. And it's hard to keep track of it. But Daniel kept track of it over 500 years before it even happened. You know, if people don't believe in God, they haven't looked at his word. The miracles that are recorded, you know, the people brought back from the dead, the people that were healed, all eyewitness accounts that would be upheld in any court of law as evidence for the existence of God and the things that were going on. God left himself with totally everything that's necessary in order to come to a very hard, solid belief in him. If there's anything we can do this evening, you know, to begin helping you get a solid belief in God, through any way you want to approach it, through science, through prophecy, through history, there's no book like the Bible. It's divine in its origin. From the very beginning, what history book tells you who the first man was and gives you his name? Or how all the nations began and accurately lays them out? Or tells you things about science? You know, we looked at Matthew Fontaine Murray. Old man, he's laying in bed sick. His grandchildren are reading to him from the Psalms. And he stops him and goes, read that again. And it talks about the paths in the sea. And he says, if God says there are paths in the sea, I'm going to go find them. And he came up with the first science book on oceanography, tracking the currents and paths in it. It was the founder of Annapolis. Men have done great things who knew about God, believed in God, and trusted in God. And that's what, you know, the invitation that he extends to all of us. Trust him, because he's worth trusting. Nothing else in this life is. Because he can not only get us through this life and help us to prosper and help us to be well protected and to grow, but also can usher us into the next world for eternity to bask in the glory of God. If there's anything we can do to help you with this, please let us know as we stand to sing.